It was 2012, just before Christmas, when Donna McGill got the call. That's not her real name. She's trying to keep a low profile for the sake of her son. After graduating with honors from college, he moved to Richmond to be near friends and to start a computer programming job. Soon, he was offered a business opportunity. By serving as the Virginia connection for marijuana dealers in California, he could make a staggering amount of money.
They would ship marijuana from California in big pods, like moving pods and storage pods. It was quick money. There was no violence. There were no guns. Apparently, he thought there was very little risk. He thought of marijuana as a small-time crime.
But in Virginia, selling marijuana is classified as a violent felony, and the state has mandatory minimum sentences. When McGill's son was caught, he was sentenced to prison for 5 years.
Even though he had no previous record, there was no violence. It was a nonviolent first-time offense. He was put in a high-security unit where there were screaming all the time, and he was locked up 23/7. He had an hour to take a shower or try to make a phone call, but there was only visitation through glass, and he did not see the light of day for 3 months. I think he shared a cell with two murderers, and it was a very scary time.
His mother begged for a phone call a day, but in Virginia prisons, that's not so easy.
Because there's very few phones, and they don't often work well, and there's a lot of people trying to use those few phones.
After 3 months, he was sent to another prison for evaluation to figure out if he should be in a low, medium, or high security setting. McGill says the conditions there were even worse.
It was in the summer, and they had no air conditioning. The temperatures were up to 115 at times.
Her son reported men were passing out from the heat, so McGill called the warden. He said nothing could be done, and then McGill's son got a warning.
A couple of officers there called him out one day, and they told him, "We don't want to hear from anybody anymore." Once you're inside the system, if you oppose it in any way, there's going to be retribution. And it always comes down to your word against theirs.
McGill and her son's dad tried to get him transferred back to their state, but even that proved difficult.
It took us 15 months to get Virginia to do the paperwork. It also cost $4,200 to transfer him.
She flew to Virginia before the transfer, hoping to have a visit. But when she arrived at the rural prison where he'd been locked up, officials said her son was gone.
And I asked them where he was, and they did not know.
Eventually, the son called from another Virginia prison, where he was held in solitary confinement for a week.
He said the only way he knew if it was day or night was they would bring him either breakfast, lunch, or dinner. And he did not have a book or a pen or anything.
She again phoned the Department of Corrections to see why her son was in solitary.
And I said, "Did something happen?" And they said, "No, it's the normal course of events to put him in solitary before he gets transferred."
McGill's son is now in a correctional center in his home state where he will serve out his sentence.
He's in a minimum security prison, and the conditions are 1,000 times better. And I want to add one thing. He almost was put in a medium security prison because Virginia could not find the arrest information for my son.
In this new place, he's had time to crunch the numbers to figure out when he will actually be released. The state offers 4.5 days of good time for each 30 in prison. McGill's son came up with a number that had him getting out a month before Virginia would allow his release. So one more time, she got on the phone and talked with a mid-level official.
I spoke to court and legal a couple of times, and they told me that the system was very difficult, and I probably couldn't understand it.
And no wonder. The policy is 14 pages long. She went higher in the system and found someone willing to look at the problem.
He made arrangements to call me back on January 6th at 9 a.m., He never did call me back, and I've never been able to speak to him since. So it's a system that answers to no one.
Ironically, McGill's son is now incarcerated in a state that may legalize marijuana later this year. But because Virginia dictates when he'll be released, he may serve 6 months in prison for something that's perfectly legal outside. Former U.S. Attorney Tim Hafey says Virginia could be spending a lot less on prisons if it put drug offenders in community-based programs, stopped classifying every drug deal as a violent crime, and took another look at laws involving marijuana.
We are still spending in Virginia a lot of time enforcing the marijuana laws. I think what you're seeing in Oregon and in Colorado and in Washington State and in Washington, D.C., they're sort of laboratories. And if the sky doesn't fall in those communities and we don't see attendant crime that goes with increasing availability of marijuana, then I think there's going to be real pressure on Congress to change the federal law.
And if the federal law changes, he says, states like Virginia will likely follow suit. The man who heads Virginia's Department of Corrections declined to be interviewed for this series. A spokesperson for the department was skeptical of McGill's claims, explained that prisoners' families are charged for transfers so taxpayers don't get that bill, noted a private company maintains the phones, and said it was the prisoners' responsibility to let family members know their whereabouts. I'm Sandy Houseman.